We are going to investigate the league quality of play being down and what is behind it, as well as checking in on the rookies yet again at quarterbacks for 2024. The Lions beating the Texans in about as ugly a game as it can possibly get, where we thought it would be one of the best ones. And that is all next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. We have a great show planned for you guys today, and what was an ugly week of football. This was just, this has been trending throughout social media and just throughout NFL fandom. Football this week was not good, and we can look at overall some of these games, especially the Sunday slate, the 4 p.m. slate. It was not a good week of football, even in the 1 p.m. games. We had Giants-Panthers. That was what you would expect. The Broncos and the Chiefs was an ugly one, where, of course, the Chiefs just came out on top with Taylor Swift's Black Magic or something happening. I don't know what they're doing out there, but anybody within that organization suggests they stop doing it, fire them, because whatever they're doing is working. You have the Steelers and Commanders, which was, kind of ugly. This was a big one. It was all right, but I just knew the Commanders were going to get punched in the mouth at some point. It's no shade towards the Commanders. It's just that they haven't faced much competition. They're a good playoff team with a bright future ahead of them. And the organization is good and young, and it seems like they have sort of a new beginning that is going on. But at some point, they were going to have some team that was good on defense and could score some points on offense that would just punch them in the mouth, which is what the Steelers exactly did. I pointed it out before the show, this week. I said, This Steelers team matches up very well against the Commanders. Commanders don't have a good defense, and they have a rookie quarterback. True. Very good recipe for success for the Steelers. Doesn't mean the Commanders aren't having a bad season. It just means they were bound to hit a speed bump at some point. And this just happened to be that week. Overall, really bad play. There was another one, the Vikings and the Jaguars. This was a brutal one. And I've been pointing out that Sam Darnold has been slowly but surely looking like his old self in the worst way possible, but here it is. 24 for 38, 241 yards. Here's the kicker. 3 interceptions. Mm. 3 picks. Mac Jones was the starter instead of Trevor Lawrence, who is now, we've found out, out for the season. And I got to say, the Patriots made the right choice. They're looking better and better as an organization for moving on from him. But they're also looking worse and worse for even thinking of taking him with the 15th overall pick in 2021, too.
True.
3 turnovers. 2 of those were interceptions, and all of them were in the last quarter of the game. Absolutely brutal. I've been rooting for Mac Jones to play better football and to show that he can be a functional quarterback in this league. But the more he plays, the worse it gets. It's not looking good for him.
No, it's really.
But a one score game in the worst way possible. 12-7. And the Vikings won off of 4 field goals. What the hell is that?
Just shameful, man.
That's just terrible. And for Sam Darnold, with the weapons that he's working with, we know what Sam Darnold's been over the course of his career. Even if he is just what he has been before this season, you should not get what you're getting here. because you have Justin Jefferson, TJ Hawkinson is back, you have Jordan Addison, you have an offensive line that is the best that Darnold has ever worked with, and you have a good defense for him to work with as well. There is no excuse for not being able to score over an entire game facing the Jaguars defense, which is one of the worst defenses in the league. Absolutely pitiful. Pitiful.
True. Yeah.
It's just insane how bad that game was. But I wanted to get into a couple of statistics here. Also, I pointed out before we started the show, for the Lions and the Texans, this was also another bad game that we'll get into soon, but combined between Jared Goff and CJ Stroud, two quarterbacks who we thought could have been MVP candidates before the season started, combined 7 interceptions in this game. This is about as bad as it gets. Don't mind Doug in the background doing whatever he's doing. My viewer's audience, he's a lab retriever mix who loves to play, and I'm home alone right now. I'm dog sitting right now. But yeah, listen. Hang on, Doug. All right. But I wanted to get into a couple of these statistics. So a big issue is a lack of balance on most of these teams. First of all, there's only 4 teams in the league that are balanced, that are top 10 in the league in scoring offense and scoring defense. That is the Detroit Lions, the Buffalo Bills, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Minnesota Vikings. Those 4 teams are the only teams that have any sort of balance that you can see on a statistical chart. And if you, and hang on. And if you think about it, so looking at the top 10 teams in just defense, the LA Chargers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Denver Broncos, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chicago Bears, and the New York Jets. Those are all teams that are top 10 in defense, but not top 10 in offense. Top 10 in just offense are the Baltimore Ravens, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, although that probably won't last very long since they're without their top 2 targets, and Baker Mayfield is working overtime over there. Mm-hmm. The Washington Commanders, the Cincinnati Bengals, the San Francisco 49ers. So this is a major balance issue, and there are so many teams that are deeply flawed that are competitive that it becomes a problem in when you look at this in the rest of the league. League quality play is down, and you can clearly see by the way that these teams are built that it just doesn't, it's just not looking good for the league right now. Give me a second, Doug. And checking back in on the top 10 teams on both sides, the most balanced teams in the league, the Detroit Lions, the Buffalo Bills, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Minnesota Vikings. They are also top 10 in total turnovers committed on offense. So, CJ, you can clearly see that it is clearly shown in the stat sheet that quality play in the league is way down this year.
Yeah, you're right. And like you mentioned, only 4 of these teams are in the top 10 in offense and defense. That's just shameful, man, I tell you. And that shows a very dangerous trend, how a bunch of these teams that are really great on offense or defense are objectively awful on the other side of the ball. And that's just not conducive to good football. It's really not. And I will do you one better. We could look at offensive and defensive rankings, but I like to look at something a bit more easy for the average Joe to grasp. Not saying it's tough for me to grasp, I'm just saying how this might resonate with a lot more people. I am, of course, referring to records. Abbott and I were crunching the numbers before the show started, and get this, as of right now, as we are recording on November 12th of 2024, 11 out of the 32 teams have three or less wins. That is god awful. And for those of you crunching the numbers at home, there's only 32 teams, and 11 times 3 is 33, meaning over a third of the NFL has three or fewer wins. Good Lord, that is terrible. And I'm going to break it down for you real quick. The Miami Dolphins are 3-6. The New York Jets and New England Patriots are 3-7. The Las Vegas Raiders are 2-7. The Cleveland Browns are also 2-7. The Jaguars are 2-8. The Titans are 2-7. The Cowboys are 3-6. The Giants are 2-8. And the Saints and the Panthers are both 3-7. Oh my God. The floor of the league has dipped so far down into the earth that the devil himself has said, nah, buddy, this is too far. And guess what, my fellow football fans? It gets so much worse than that. Because are you ready for this, kids? Are you sitting down? Over half of the league has a record below 500. 17 out of the 32 teams, or for those who keep track at home, half of the league would be 16. So 17 out of the 32 teams have a record below 500. When half the league is statistically worse than average, we have a problem. And that quality of play has directly translated to the overall record. Oh, good God. It's just not pretty. This has just been terrible. Just by all metrics, this has just been an awful season. And even still, a lot of these other teams are just middling. I'm just trying to put this into words. For example, the NFC South, the best team is the 6-4 Falcons. And do we fancy Atlanta a Super Bowl contender? Unless you're our good friend Robert Shelley, the answer is no. And look at the rest of that division. The Bucs are 4-6, and the Saints and the Panthers, as mentioned earlier, are 3-7. Garbage. Or look at the AFC, for example. Let's look at the AFC East. You got the Bills. Super, they're 8-2. Then the Dolphins are 3-6, and the Pats and the Jets are both 3-7. Just god awful. And the AFC South, the Texans are 6-4. That's solid, but we're all a little disappointed in them, aren't we, Adam? We're a little not enthused by Houston, right?
Houston managed to force Detroit to their quarterback was through five interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they still lost. So
exactly. So Houston, which forced five interceptions and lost, you know, they're now 6-4, and the rest of their division isn't even above 500. So like, how many like legitimate teams are there? And I mean really legitimate, because there are some teams looking at you, Kansas City, and especially Pittsburgh, where your record is very, very, very deceiving. I mean, at barest of minimum, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. The Steelers will probably once again be another one-and-done team in the playoffs. So we can look at teams that are ranked top 10 offense and defense, but when you look at the records, it's getting that much worse.
Yeah, and you can see that it's just it all comes down to the way that these teams were built, and it seems that there's also been a culture that has been established of, if your team isn't currently one of the league favorites to be in contention, then you're a bottom dwelling team. Every team is fishing for that number one quarterback who's going to just bring them to the promised land, which I understand to an extent, but if everyone's doing it, then everyone's going to be bad. So at what point do you sit there and think the future is now? Let's go and win now. Instead of going out there and trying to trying to tank for a draft pick and basically playing for April rather than February. I mean, that becomes a huge problem. And the teams that are in contention are not really built that well, right? Only, like we said, only four teams in the entire league are top 10 in both offense and defense.
Yeah, one of those teams might not even be there for that much longer, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings looked terrible this past week. I mean, their defense still looks good. But how much do you trust Sam Darnold to be the quarterback to take you to the playoffs at this rate?
You don't. You don't. And my point is, if you are on a team that, or if you are a fan of a team that has playoff aspirations, and even if you make the playoffs, but your starting quarterback is Sam Darnold, I would say stock the liquor cabinet now, because only pain awaits you in the future.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I think we've touched on this quite enough.
Yep.
Since my dog basically ruined the segment.
Oh, it'll be fine. Just take a salt pad. It'll be good.
All right. Next, we're going to check in on the rookies for this draft class. Six quarterbacks taken with the first 12 picks. Kind of see how that is going, because for a couple, it's looking good. For others, things are going south real fast. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So, rookie quarterback play has been interesting this year. Right out of the gates, it was looking awesome. And for some of these quarterbacks, it still is looking good. But let's look at Caleb Williams in the past few games, because it has not been pretty overall. I mean, this kid, I cited a stretch of time. It was a 3-game stretch where he threw 7 touchdowns to just 1 pick. And he was getting better and better and better by the week. And we're thinking, holy crap, the Bears finally found their guy. But overall, in the last 3 games since then, he has thrown 0 touchdown passes. He hasn't turned the ball over. But his completion percentage has been barely at 50%, barely. And it's not like he hasn't been throwing the ball much. They've been trusting him to huck it all over the place. And this past game against New England, he threw it 30 times, 41 attempts against Arizona, and 24 against Washington. You lost all 3 games, and one can argue that Caleb Williams was a big reason why they lost. On top of that, during that stretch of time, Caleb Williams has been sacked a total of 18 times during that stretch, 9 in this past game, 6 in the game before that against the Cardinals, 3 against Washington. And it's not like these are some elite front sevens they're facing. These are just like the Cardinals are okay. They're fine. Washington is not a good defense at all. He was supposed to destroy that defense, and the Patriots have been nothing to write home about. So what the hell is going on? Another sub point to put out. There was a stat put out that over this past game against New England, 34 snaps, Caleb Williams took 6 seconds or more to get the ball out. There's a lot of players who don't even do that during the entirety of their careers. He did that in 1 game. How did that even happen? And like, this is the second year in a row where a Bears quarterback has had that issue where they're holding on to the ball too long. Last year, Justin Fields, according to next-gen stats, held the ball for, on average, 3.3 seconds. That's the most of any quarterback in the entire league last year. And on top of that, their total pocket time was 2.7 seconds, which was the most time that a team has allowed the quarterback to have a clean pocket on average. So how could you possibly blame this on the offensive line if two different quarterbacks have had trouble holding on to the ball for way too long? What I look at is the organization that hasn't developed a 4,000-yard passer in their entire existence. This is one of the most historic franchises in all of league history. And somehow you haven't developed a competent quarterback in that time, and you've drafted three different quarterbacks in the first round. Every single one of them has had the same issue. So I look at coaching, and not just in not just in a scheming way, but in a developmental way. How have you been this bad that you haven't been able to develop a single quarterback who has been competent while basically fishing for draft picks in the first round? I mean, this is getting absolutely dreadful. I look at the Bears, and I mean, it's early. I still think Caleb Williams has promise. He showed some tremendous abilities earlier on in the season, but there's no doubt he is getting worse as the season goes on, and I put that on the organization.
You know, it's true, and you could blame the offensive line. I mean, it has been pretty substandard, but that excuse can only carry you so far. Because Adam said he's holding onto the ball for way too long, and there is a stat. Adam would know it better than I would. What are you doing?
You just ate the rubber ducky, but.
Well, you know, it'll be fine. You know, put a Band-Aid on it. It'll be fine. But, oh my God. There was a stat that I think Adam told me about how Caleb Williams was, at least in this most recent game, which he played against the New England Patriots, holding onto the ball like on multiple occasions for about 6 seconds. Adam, do you regurgitate that for the crowd, por favor?
I'm sorry?
About that stat you told me about Caleb Williams against New England, about all like the multiple occasions which he held onto the ball for 6 or more seconds?
34 different snaps where he held the ball for 6 or more seconds.
And I figured it was 34. I didn't want to misquote you. But yeah. Yeah. And we on this podcast have said on numerous occasions that one of the biggest sins of old Justin Fields was that he held onto the ball for too long. And it's true. He does. And he continued to do it in Pittsburgh for what it's worth. But now we get to see Caleb Williams do it. So this is not a Caleb Williams thing. This is not a Justin Fields thing. This is a Bears thing. And if you did watch the Pats-Bears game, if you listened closely with the right set of ears, you could hear the Bears fans chanting Fire Flus, which is a shortened version of Matt Eberflus, for those of you who possibly don't get it. So yeah, and we have also said on this podcast that the Bears need to fire Matt Eberflus even more than Adam needs to take out his dog right now, which he's currently doing. He didn't hear me say that. Oh, yeah, I think he heard me. Probably through the headphones, but that's okay. But, oh my God, Matt Eberflus needs to be fired. But the Bears will proceed to do literally everything but that because this broke this morning that the Bears just fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. Too little, too late. I mean, everyone who's a Seahawks fan would tell you that Shane Waldron is the offensive equivalent of stage 4 cancer. So the Bears, if you even love Caleb Williams half as much as you claim to, this offseason Matt Eberflus has got to go because he can't develop. Maybe bring in an offensive-minded guy because, you know, I'm pretty sure Eberflus was defensive coordinator for the Colts. So yeah, maybe bring in someone who's offensive minded. Just a thought.
Yeah, so here's the exact stat. This was a tweet from Mike Reese who cited it. Brendan Schuler said the Patriots looked at 34 snaps in which Caleb Williams had the ball for 6 seconds or longer. And he cited, Shuler said, that alone is a crazy stat that some quarterbacks don't even hit in a career. He said, noting his role was to ensure Williams didn't get out of the pocket. So essentially, you have two different quarterbacks, two different styles of play. Caleb was regarded as a pocket passer who can scan the field much better than Fields could. And now somehow he has the exact same problems Fields did. Why is this happening?
I mean, obviously it's the organization. Like,
you have to point to the organization at this point. Mitch Trubisky was never, he was considered a deep ball player. He was regarded as a prospect in the same way that Josh Allen was regarded, a gunslinger quarterback who could also scramble, who was able to be able to scan the field in a very effective way. And somehow they messed him up. You messed up Justin Fields. And now here we are. We're looking at Caleb Williams. And it's happening again. I mean, we just can't, we can't continue with this. Something has to change. And it's looking like history is repeating itself yet again.
Let's just move on to another quarterback, perhaps, because this topic is only going to give us an aneurysm the longer we think about it.
I mean, it really is. Like, it takes skill to, you almost have to try to be this bad at developing quarterbacks. I didn't understand it before. CJ, to your credit, you always point out Patrick Mahomes, if he was drafted to the Bears, like everyone suggested the Bears should have drafted him to. You pointed out if Patrick Mahomes was drafted to the Bears, he would have a lot of the same issues. And I thought you were crazy for the longest time. I'm at the point where I kind of agree with you. Like, even a historically great quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, anyone who's a young kid who's trying to develop in this organization, they're going to be met with failure. Would Patrick Mahomes look like Mitch Trubisky or Justin Fields? Probably not. He'd probably be okay. He'd be that one quarterback who would be like, he has great raw abilities. He looks good, but he has a bad organization. And maybe he gets hurt at some point. And we're just thinking of it as one of the great what ifs. What if he was drafted to a better organization? You have to think at this point. Most of the great quarterbacks today, if they were drafted to the Bears, I can't even see them being good for this Bears team. It looks that bad.
Probably not, no. And it's just, the real damning part is that he has weapons. He has DJ Moore. He has Keenan Allen. They drafted Rome Odunze for him. And their running back, DeAndre Swift, has been great this season. The line, at least on paper, looks more solid. And the defense has been beefed up. So when it comes to the Bears organization, I'm only going to say this once. There is a cultural rot. And something's got to change. Maybe the McCaskey should sell the team. That's probably what it should be. But other than that, I don't know. Like, the Bears just seem cursed. And like Adam mentioned, never had a 4,000-yard passer. Just ridiculous.
Yeah. Looking at the rest of these rookies, one other point from this week I wanted to bring up is, and I kind of alluded to this when we were talking, when we introduced the last segment talking about the Jaguars, what a great decision the Patriots made by drafting Drake May and moving on from Mac Jones. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer eventually, but I mean, it's night and day looking at Drake May on a team with nothing to work with versus the Jaguars, who actually have a few weapons for Mac Jones to throw to. I mean, Mac Jones, like I said, he turned the ball over three times, and all three of them happened in crunch time, in the fourth quarter, when they were down a possession and trying to come back.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was just ridiculous. On the other end, Drake May, while he hasn't wowed you with the statistics entirely, he's working well with the position that he has. And I've always preached a quarterback who's been able to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Drake May has done. It's what he did in UNC, you point out to your credit.
Yeah, I mean, his offensive line at UNC was terrible. His senior year, his wide receiver one was Devontae Walker. And only one player on that entire UNC defense, linebacker Cedric Gray, was drafted. I mean, including Drake May, only three people from UNC got drafted last year. And they also had no running game to speak of, so he literally had to put the whole program on his shoulders. And it's looking like he can do the same to some extent in the league. Obviously, it's a different animal, but it's a good sign. And May has at least made plays, right, with the Patriots, and he is showing flashes. Obviously, once they beef up the roster more, because I've said this before, New England on paper, solely on paper, has got to be the worst roster in the league. Like, really no blue chip talent to speak of, no star power, like just a bunch of guys they found together. But the fact they have three wins is nuts to me thus far. And there's a chance they could snag one or two more at the end of the year. So my question is, if you put Caleb Williams in this situation, does he perform like May? Honestly, probably not.
I don't know. Because we just got done talking about a Bears organization that has been so bad at developing quarterbacks that it almost looks like they're trying to screw it up for them.
Mm-hmm.
If you put Caleb Williams on this Patriots team, if you have Alex Van Pelt instead of Shane Waldron,
That's not really a step. That's probably a lateral step, if anything, if I'm being real.
Well, I see it more of a step forward, but just not in a good way. Like, in the way I look at it, yes, Alex Van Pelt was probably... I don't like Alex Van Pelt. I don't think he's right for this team. But he's at least... What I give him credit for is at least developing Drake May. Because I don't think we ever saw...
TV coach.
We never saw Drake May being as good as he is this early on. We thought he was a project. We thought that he had some footwork to work on. And it turns out that he got better over training camp, over preseason, during the weeks that he was sitting from weeks 1 through 5. And he actually kind of looks like a quarterback where if he had more weapons around him, they could be a playoff contender right now. He actually looks that far along. And I give Van Pelt a little credit on that.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean Van Pelt is a good coordinator by any stretch of the imagination. What I'm saying is it goes from negative points with Waldron to like maybe plus one or just back to zero with Van Pelt. It's that bad over in Chicago that if Williams was there, I think things are a lot better. Because I still think Caleb Williams is a really good prospect. I'm not budging on that. But I just think the Bears are that bad at developing quarterbacks that they screw up can't miss prospects. And I still believe that Caleb is a can't miss prospect. It's just that the Bears somehow missed him. And I look at it like that. Other quarterbacks to note, Bo Nix continues to play very stable football. And it sucks because there's been so many storylines amongst all the other rookie quarterbacks this year that Bo Nix has become an afterthought. But this kid has actually
really well.
Played very, very good football. So far, he's thrown 10 touchdowns to 6 picks. In his last game, I mean, he threw no touchdowns to 1 interceptions, but that one game against Carolina, 284, 3 touchdowns. I know it's Carolina, but that's still pretty good. And overall,
one of the things about being a quarterback, you know, when it comes to especially the principle of like walking before you can run, is that you gotta beat teams you're supposed to beat at the barest minimum, right?
Yep.
So I'd say that's a good sign.
Yep. Overall, he's been a good he's been pretty decent. I'm not saying he can play. I'm just saying that so far, he looks so much better than we thought he would. And he's much further along than we thought he would in year one. And it's not like the Broncos have a good organization that they're working with. Overall, this team is not all that good. They've had their own issues with developing quarterbacks outside of John Elway. And they had they had Peyton Manning fall on their laps for that four-year window at the end of his career. But that's it. They didn't. Other than that, they really haven't had much.
Four.
Yeah, 4 years. Other than that, they really haven't had much to work with as far as quarterback play, which I put on the organization. They haven't developed much. Also, looking at Jaden Daniels, you pointed this out. This has kind of been the theme throughout this segment. Organizational success. The Commanders, up until 5 minutes ago, were a terrible organization. And they looked like a dumpster fire until Dan Snyder left. Suddenly, the storm clouds part. You get Jaden Daniels. You have a well-coached system. Dan Quinn is having a nice little redemption arc. Overall, I like Jaden Daniels. And I think he's a slam dunk right now for Offensive Rookie of the Year. How good he will be another question. He's shown very good abilities as far as his passing, as far as his arm talent goes. What I question is how good at this point. It's not a matter of whether or not this kid will pan out. It's a matter of how good he'll be. Because remember, there's been a lot of quarterbacks their rookie years who have looked fantastic, who didn't end up becoming all that much. They were still good quarterbacks, like Dak Prescott. If you look at Dak Prescott's rookie year back in 2016 versus Josh Allen's rookie year in 2018, you would think, based on their careers, if that you project that over their careers, you would know who's better. Clearly you don't, because Josh Allen's a better quarterback than Dak Prescott. So there are quarterbacks in this draft who may end up being better than Jaden Daniels, but that doesn't mean Jaden Daniels can't play. I just think Daniels was the most NFL-ready prospect besides Caleb Williams, who the Bears managed to mess up. And I think we're going to find out in a few years who's the real best quarterback in this draft. Maybe it's still Daniels, but what if Drake May gets a good team around him? Yeah. What if it turns out Michael Penix can actually light it up? What if J.J. McCarthy comes back and, you know, gets the most possible production that he can out of Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson? What if he can actually play, right? What if Caleb Williams finally gets his head screwed on straight? Or let's call it like it is, that Bears organization finds a way to develop him and coach him up the way he's supposed to be, not holding the ball for 6 seconds or more, 34 different times in one game. All I'm saying is give it time, because this entire quarterback draft class looks really good so far. And I think there's a great chance that it becomes historic.
It looks like it. At least the top three plus Bo Nix have looked really solid. So, hey, it's already looking better than the last big QB class in 2021.
It looks much better so far.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on. Well, I'm sure we'll check in on this rookie class later on this season, because, again, it's a very storied class. There's a lot of ups and downs. It's a roller coaster. Lots of drama with all of these quarterbacks. I'm very happy as a Patriots fan looking at Drake May. So far, he's looked really good. Right now, as it turns out, we want to see how they can surround him with a team and how well coached they are. Yeah, it's all on the organization on how they can manage this, because they have the right guy, but they need to be able to build a team around him, protect him with a good offensive line, give him some weapons, work on that defense. Coaching scheme needs to get better. We'll see where it goes. All right.
Our hopes are not high, especially for the weapons part, but we'll see.
What's that?
I said our hopes are not high, especially with the weapons part, but we'll see.
We'll see what happens. All right. We're going to get to our game of the week pick. We'll recap the Lions and the Texans. That's next. This is the Fumblerooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumblerooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So our game of the week from last Friday was the Lions at the Texans. And we did have the Lions unanimously winning this game. And overall, I mean, it was a competitive game. It was a one-score game.
It was a game.
It happened. The game occurred.
It was one of the games of all time, some would say.
That's one way you could put it. The Texans were up 23-7 at one point. 2-possession game. And as I mentioned, Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions in this game. 5. CJ Stroud threw 2. I mean, this was, as far as competitiveness, yeah, it was a competitive game. It was a one-score game, but it was so ugly. And this is my gripe with the entire league, which is that league play is sloppy. It is really bad. You can point to overall quality of play, which is amount of turnovers. You can look at penalties, which get called quite a bit. You can look at the way the teams are made. As I mentioned, only 4 teams in the entire league this year are actually balanced. These are 2 teams that were actually supposed to be fairly balanced. They had talent on both sides of the ball. And it was so ugly. And I don't know how you can fix it. I really don't. Because these 2 teams were both bad. It's about who wanted it less.
Oh, yeah. It's true. I mean, it was who wanted it less. And I am so afraid for the Houston Texans. I really don't want them to become like their AFC South counterpart, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, a team that peaks too soon and you're hyping up as a contender, then they completely fall off. The only thing I'll say on that front is at bare minimum, Houston has the injury excuse because Diggs is out for the year. We don't know when Nico Collins is going to be back. So whenever he does come back, I'm going to expect them to maybe pick it up. We'll see, hopefully. But the Lions, this is why nobody sold on Detroit, because, yeah, they won. Yeah, they beat the Texans. That's super. But 5 interceptions from Jared Goff. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he only throw like 5 up until that point the entire season? Or some weirdly low number like that?
4. He threw four interceptions to start the year.
That's even worse. That is even worse. He more than doubled it in one game. Ah, it's just this game. It's like you need to take a shower afterwards because it just, God, it's so unclean. Just, oh my God. It's like, oh. For me and Adam, it's like watching the average game of our alma mater where we went to college at Dean. That's what it was. It harkened us back to that. And look, I mean, I will give the Lions, I won't say they're flowers. I'll give them a flower. I mean, you know, you won.
Give them a dandelion. It's like,
it's a weed.
Give him a dandelion. Like it's a, it looks like a flower, but it's actually a weed.
Yeah. And not even the one that you can exhale on and, you know, can send all the little puffs flying. No, you get the yellow one. Not even the fun one. You get the yellow one. That's what you get, Detroit, because you won. And then there's just the Texans. I mean, I know CJ Stroud threw 2 picks, but your defense. got Goff to throw five, not one, not two, but five INTs, and you lost? Yeah, they are not contenders. I don't even care if when Nico Collins gets back. You're not contenders.
Yeah, that I'm about to give up on this Texans team. I mean, I had as one of my Super Bowl teams before the season started. I actually had this as my Super Bowl, by the way. I had the Lions coming out of the NFC and the Texans coming out of the AFC. I really thought the Texans were going to be a good team this year, but and they will be probably fine. I think they're going to make the playoffs, but are they a Super Bowl team? No. No.
Probably not, yeah.
Lions, I think they still are, but five interceptions is really something to look at for your quarterback. I've never seen a quarterback take himself out of the MVP conversation in such a shift like Jared Goff just did on Sunday Night Football. I mean, five picks in one game. That is a ridiculous way to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this, yeah, this was bad.
There's really nothing to say other than just, oh God.
What a bad game. All right, let's move on. And we're going to get into our week 10, top three, bottom three. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. Into the top three, bottom three, the best and worst performances from week 10's slate of games. We're going to start off and we're going to follow suit with our title, which is Who Wants It Less? The Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, they played a severely ugly game. And in any other week, they might actually crack our bottom three. We've had a winning team be in our bottom three before. Mm-hmm. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to put them in the top three. Because when you win nine games in a row,
that is impressive. No?
At that point, I don't know what they're doing with that organization. I don't know how they're doing it. But they better not stop. Because they are 9-0. And there is no way you can win nine games in a row on accident. Maybe you're not as good as the undefeated record says, but you're still at least a competitive team who's worthy of being in the playoffs. If you're winning nine games, 15 in a row, if you go back all the way to last year. So unbelievable stuff. I don't know how it's happening. A blocked field goal, which was supposed to be a chip shot. I don't know how they do it, but just the fact that they're 9-0, that they won another game and somehow did it with the weirdest luck. I'm sorry. I'm putting them in the top three. Next, we're going to go with the Detroit Lions. Your quarterback threw five interceptions. Your team went down 23-7, and you somehow came back and won. We bring up Who Wants It Less all the time. The Chiefs and the Lions didn't want it less. In other words, they were somehow on the winning end of a game where they had no business winning. This was a bad week for football. So you can see we're getting creative with our top three here. Much more normal answer, which is the Arizona Cardinals. And I think they have played their way into being relevant this year. They're 6-4 now. Kyler Murray looks like a good quarterback overall this year. 12 touchdowns to three interceptions over 2,000 yards. Overall, he has willed this team into being a playoff team. I mean, I'm going to give their flowers there. I'm going to give them their flowers. They deserve it because they've played their way into being a playoff team. They're 6-4. There's not many teams that are about even above 500 this year. And the Arizona Cardinals, a team that we didn't think would even be in the playoffs, are somehow 6-4 right now. They are one of those few teams in the league, that's that thin list, who is actually in playoff contention. I'll give it to them. You did it. Good job. All right, going on to our bottom three, there's a lot to pick
from. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of contenders, believe you me, gang.
We're going to start with the New York Jets, who the Cardinals beat 31-6.
What a disappointment they are, I tell you.
I don't know which of you pointed it out, either you, CJ, or Chris, our other co-host, saying that Aaron Rodgers is everything everybody thought Tom Brady was going to be.
That was with Chris. The
Buccaneers. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, a team with the Jets that is loaded with talent, an organization with a losing culture, and somehow Tom Brady took that exact situation and turned it into a Super Bowl contender twice in a row. And still in his last year when he was age 45, snuck into the playoffs the next year and flirted with 5,000 yards in that last season he played.
Yep. And for what it's worth, there are rumors swirling that if the Jets keep cratering like this, they might blow it up. And honestly, you kind of have to, because I don't know what Jets fan out there needs to hear this, but let's speak the truth. Aaron Rodgers is not going to get any better than he is right now. Honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if he retired. Really wouldn't. So, like I said, you got to blow it up. I mean, other than, I would say, like Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, Olufashinu, the Williams brothers, and Gardner, I think you should listen to trade offers for probably everyone else.
I've already told you, if the Jets took calls for Garrett Wilson, I think the Patriots should call up. And I think they should offer a day one
first rounder for Garrett Wilson, man. I'm not doing it.
Not this year's first rounder, because I think it's too early of a pick for them to trade to him for Garrett Wilson. But he's a wide receiver one. He's a low end wide receiver one who probably wouldn't be that much money to re-sign, that is.
Yes, he would. Because the wide receiver market is nuts, man.
Yeah, but there's a couple different ways. Like, Jalen Waddle isn't being paid that much. Devontae Smith.
True. Give him, Jalen Waddle thing, and we're good, yeah?
That's what I'm saying. Like, he is part of that middle tier of wide receiver ones, where if he's your top target, you're a Super Bowl contender, but you also don't have to pay him that much. Meaning you can focus on other areas. If you gave up a first rounder for that, I'm okay with that. Let's say you use this year's first rounder on a tackle, and then you go in and you trade away next year's for Garrett Wilson. Then who cares where that first round pick goes? That means, I mean, with a left tackle and Garrett Wilson, that means you're a competitive team, and that first-round pick is probably closer to the back end of the draft. So I'll take it. I'll do that yesterday. In fact, Robert, in the same group chat, he said, I'll go as far as to give up a third as well, which I thought was a little crazy, but, like, I mean, if you have Garrett Wilson and a starting left tackle, then you're probably a competitive team if you get those two things for next year. Which means that first round pick doesn't amount to much. So I don't hate it. I really don't.
Nah, right. I don't even think the Jets, if they were going to trade him for a first, they wouldn't trade him to us, unfortunately. Or them. I say us, like I'm part of the team, but you know what I mean.
Next team up is the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not quite sure what I expected from Cooper Rush stepping in for CeeDee Lamb. Maybe just.
You mean for Dak?
Yeah, for Dak Prescott, all the names. For stepping in for Dak Prescott, I don't know what I expected, but it certainly wasn't this. And I know Cooper Rush is just a backup, and you're saying, well, why are you expecting more from a backup? It's Cooper Rush. He's one of the better backups in the league. And If you guys recall a few years ago, Cooper Rush had to step in the start of the season for the Cowboys, and he actually led them to a solid record. And once Dak Prescott took over, he was able to lead them to the playoffs, and they went 12-5. So I expected a little more than just 13 for 23 and 45 passing yards and getting blown out, destroyed by your rival Philadelphia Eagles, who dropped 34 on you. 34-6. And by the way, this Eagles team is looking better and better and better as the year goes on. I got to say, they may end up squeaking their way into that Super Bowl conversation. Just saying. They're looking better and better. They're a very well-rounded team. Their defense is getting better. It's tightening up. Their offense is well-rounded. They have a better running game this year. They have good targets. A.J. Brown is starting to look like his normal self. You have Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. Saquon Barkley looks like his vintage self. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, it could very well be. But, oh, my God. Just the Cowboys. Real quick, should they lower the curtains when they play games? Because, granted, even if CeeDee Lamb caught that touchdown, nothing was going to change. But, oh, my God.
And another thing about CeeDee Lamb is when Cooper Rush is playing, CeeDee Lamb is one of the biggest benefactors of that. And that's very rare for a wide receiver one to get better with a backup coming in, but it usually does happen. And it didn't this week. And yeah, sure, you can make another argument. The curtains could come down, but is that the reason they haven't?
No, I just thought it was
championship
funny.
In a quarter century.
No, I just think it was funny.
Oh, I think it's funny too. But I think we're coming up on 30 years. We're getting closer. Yeah. Wasn't it 1996?
I think it was, yeah. Or maybe that was like the last time they won the Super Bowl or something like that. But,
oh, so that's like 28 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting to historic levels of bad out there. And at least for the past few years, they've been winning 12 games perennially. Now they're just bad. One thing I will disagree with many Cowboys haters out there on is that they have a losing culture. They don't have a losing culture. That's an idiotic statement. They don't have a losing culture because they make the playoffs fairly often. What they do have is a choking culture. A culture of unintelligent head coaches, a culture of bad organizational decisions outside of drafting, which has saved their organization. And overall, that is sunk the ship. So they do have a choking culture that they need to figure out. And I think that comes down to coaching. I think that comes down to organizational decisions and free agency. But yeah. Just something to look at, because Derrick Henry was available and decided to be an idiot and not get him. At least not be in on him, right? If Derrick Henry didn't want to be there, at least you tried. But there were so many running backs in free agency who ended up being pretty good this year, by the way. Aaron Jones, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry. All three of those guys have actually been pretty good this year. And you decided not to go in on any of them. Right now you have Rico Dowdle and the skeleton, the ghost of Ezekiel Elliott.
More like the bloated corpse of Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah. Okay, here's our last one. The Chicago Bears. Again, so we've already touched on this pretty much in depth, but I'll just recap it in the most simplified way possible. They are in the top three. They are in the bottom three, not because they lost to the Patriots. And in embarrassing fashion, I might add, it's because it's an organizational issue that runs deeper than just the roster around them. This is an organization that cannot develop quarterbacks, and it is killing this franchise. It could already be dead. I mean, it's just, I don't know how to fix it. This is an organizational issue. It runs deep. And it's not just the fact that they lost to the Patriots. It's the fact that they are yet again ruining a quarterback.
Yep. And However, they are this week's bottom three. So focusing on this week's game, it is also worth noting that when they lost to the Patriots, they gave up 9 sacks, did not get into the end zone even once, and didn't even get 200 total yards of offense. Shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of bad football this week. Lots of bad football. Shout out to the Atlanta Falcons who lost to the Saints somehow.
And the Giants, don't forget them. They lost to the Panthers.
I already pointed that out, but I thought I was kind of happy with that because, again, the Patriots, the silver lining to them not having a good team this year is that they are in the hunt for a top 5 pick. So the Panthers, I thought, were the biggest threat to the Patriots to finishing ahead of them in the tank race for the number 1 pick. But now that the Patriots won, I think they're at a point where they're just not bad enough to have a top 10 pick. They may not.
The rest of their schedule is pretty tough, but we'll see.
We'll see. If they end up finishing 3-14, I think that gets them top 5. That would be nice. Yeah. It's never nice when they lose and end up with a top 3 pick for the third year in a row. But
I mean, you can't be selfish. You got to think of the future. Wait.
Silver lining is they would get Will Campbell. All right. That concludes our top 3, bottom 3. Painful week to recap.
Jeez, man.
No wonder. Really bad football. I mean, this has just been, it's been a shit show. Overall, a really bad year. And if you remember back to last year, 2023 wasn't much to write home about either. So league play is just going down more and more by the year. And I wish that we could fix it.
What even causes it? Like, I don't know.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think teams get either too impatient when it comes to trying to get in contention. They start quarterbacks too early. And I also think that teams look themselves in the mirror too soon and decide to tank. You very rarely see teams that are middle class but still play like they're trying to win a Super Bowl. It's either they're trying to win it all or they're not. It's too all or nothing. And I think that's become the problem. You're starting quarterbacks too early. And once you realize that you're not in contention anymore, or at least that you're on the edge of not being in contention, you give up. They roll over and they say, let's just fish for another draft pick, which is a stupid way to go.
Yep. And by the way, for all the fans out there, for what it's worth, don't tank for a quarterback this year. I'm not sold on this class. So, yeah, enjoy Ward or Sanders. Surely they'll lead you to something. Maybe.
Possibly. All right. Anything else before we end the show tonight?
Nah.
All right. That'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at @FomoRuski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.